See all that stuff you just listened to at the end of the last episode? We're going to do it, but like 10 times faster.
Real quickly, buy tickets to our live show. It's going to be awesome. Heaps of shit will happen. James can't drink out of a pint, so he's going to be sad.
Hannah gives Shane some shit in this episode. We all get a little bit more drunk, as usual, because it went like an hour and a half, so it's a lot more fun.
Bitch. I mean, lovely lady. With it, like 98% lovely lady, 2% bitch.
Yeah, you do need to listen in. See, stick around about 40 minutes into this episode. There's an amazing moment that happens between Hannah and Shane. And you'll hear all about our new cool documentary, That Joke Isn't Funny Anymore, which is basically taking over the world. And Shane typing and buying some tickets.
Yeah, just looking. Only, how many tickets did I say before?
Two.
There's four tickets available now, so since we started this chat.
Someone gave two back. Enjoy the episode, guys. It pretty much picks up where we left off coming back from the toilet, so have a great whatever you're doing. That's a new phrase, isn't it? Have a great whatever you're doing.
The following podcast contains three mates talking shit over some beers. As you can imagine, the language can get a wee bit hairy from time to time. So, get involved. Grab a beer and join us for Drunk Therapy, the podcast.
Full disclosure for anyone that's listening, we just went for a pee, but we've kind of talked about some stuff off air that I want to bring on at some point.
With that seamless transition.
Nailed it. They would never even know.
So we've had the Shane BAFTAs already. Hannah, your new piece that you're working on, or you've finished, is now nominated for a Scottish BAFTA called That Joke Isn't Funny Anymore. So you need to tell us a little bit about that.
So this is a film about my aunt and uncle, beloved aunt and uncle Lindsay and Paul. Lindsay's my mum's sister. And Lindsay's a nurse. They live in complete isolation in the Wicklow Mountains of Ireland. So they built their own house in the mountains. Paul was a painter and decorator, her man, and he was very, very handy. So they like moved out. He's a Dubliner. They moved out there, built this house. And then 2 years after they built the house, Paul suffered a massive aneurysm. It burst and went to the hospital. It was like catastrophic. Like she thought she was going to lose him, but he pulled through. And then when they were sort of operating on that, they found another aneurysm that wasn't burst and gave him a choice, basically, like said, like, we can either operate on this and remove it, or you can leave it and it might, you know, might be 20 years and it might not, you know, but it might be tomorrow that it could go. And he couldn't live with it, so he decided to operate, but that came with a lot of risks. So basically that was a massive decision for him to make. It was like 60% survival. You might be left with a bit of damage, you know, like short term, because of where it is, it might affect your personality, might give you seizures, might give you bad short term memory loss. And it did all of the above. So he got it taken out and then his memory was severely affected. A really rare side effect that my uncle has been left with is it is actually an official condition. It's called Witzelsucht, which is a German word that means addiction to wisecracking. And it's like he can't stop telling jokes. So he has issues remembering the words for things. He has issues maybe remembering names or things that he's done that day, but he can remember jokes. He always was a bit of a joker. So he's got a repertoire of maybe like 50 jokes that he'll tell.
Yeah.
And I was obviously always really fascinated by that. Like, I knew that that was like an interesting story. And the thing that really fascinates me about it is that like, it's quite a tragic situation. His jokes are quite funny. So it's like this like line between kind of like laughter and tears that sort of exists in their life, and tragedy and comedy. And they like laugh through a lot of what's happened to them. But also for my auntie, as you can imagine, living with that for 10 years, and everything that comes with it, like not really being able to work properly, and they're in a lot of, you know, it puts them under a great deal of financial strain. She has to, you know, look after the mortgage. She has to go out and work. Paul, you know, doesn't always spend their money on productive things. You know, he's a bit like a typical Dubliner. He smokes, he drinks.
Joke books.
No, doesn't need them. He's got them all up there. So I always wanted to make this film about them. I definitely underestimated how hard it would be to make that film and how like close I am to it and protective I am of them, and the way that that sort of like maybe slightly fucked me up when I did make the film. But I've made the film and it's doing, like, people are reacting really well to it. So it's got into film festivals that like I literally could only dream of. I'm going to Doc NYC next month, which is the biggest documentary festival in America. And sure. And I first started learning to make documentaries in New York Film Academy. I did a wee 6-month six-week course that I spent like all my money that I'd made doing freelance ads. I spent it on this like New York trip, like really fucked it actually, because I forgot that like I needed to keep money by for tax and just spent all my money. But I'm going back there now to like one of my favourite places on earth to show this film, and I'm bringing my auntie with me, which is amazing. She's never been to New York. So that for me is like huge, because like she so deserves, she's a really intelligent, amazing person who has had a been dealt a shit hand. And I just want like something to come from that.
It's even like when you're talking about asking that question, that just put like a cold shadow down my spine. Imagine like, see, having someone going to you, look, we can operate in this 60% fucking survival rate, and the potential repercussions are huge. However, if you don't, it could be the end of you, and you don't know when. It's just the biggest mindfuck of a question, because you kind of know what the right answer is, I guess, but even then it's picking between a shitty place and a fucking the worst case, you know what I mean? It's
and he had two different brain surgeons sort of telling him different things, so like, oh, you should do this, no, you should do this, and he had to make that decision. But the film is really about what that's meant for my aunt. Yeah. It's sort of about like her, because Paul like is, you know, Paul just lives his life and he accepts it, and he kind of starts again each day in a way, like he does, and he sort of has his routine.
Is it like, this might sound insensitive, I'm sorry if it does, is it like 50 First
Dates? Exactly. So it's like he can start again and he has to write everything down. Whereas for my aunt, like, so if you can imagine yourself in that position, like, so while it's really, I actually first started making the film because some members of my family fell out with Paul a wee bit, like, were a wee bit like, you need to stop taking advantage of Lindsay, you need to stop drinking, you need to stop, like, you know, like, it's not fair on Lindsay, like, so. Whereas I was like, he's had a brain injury, how can we possibly know what that's like to live through that, to go through that every day? Like, so I kind of initially made the film trying to like understand it from Paul's perspective, and the film actually more became about, naturally became about my aunt and how that is for her. Because if you can imagine, like, the person you love changes irreversibly, and you need to, their personality changes, and you need to decide, am I going to stay because it's not their fault, or am I going to go because they're not the same person that I fell in love with.
Yeah, and that's huge, because we change no matter what over time anyway. So you can make that decision just 10 years down the line, you're like, that's not the person that I was with. I'm not originally, and I'm not that person either.
Yeah.
So we can go our separate ways. And I'm just talking about in general divorce, but that right there's a sense of guilt and responsibility placed on your aunt above her feelings, you know. And like, I'm just sitting trying to think in my perspective. I'm going, would that be strong enough? Would that be like, you know, would that be like, fuck, where's the escape hatch?
Can I just get away from this and we'll put him into care? The divorce rate is huge. Like, people that have had a brain injury. So my uncle actually attends an art class. It's like a rehabilitation art class. They just draw, and it's sort of everybody there has had some sort of brain injury. Most of the people, like, not just their partners have left, but their family have, like, given up. And then she's there, and, like, almost, like, I suppose, like, some members of my family have, like, a little bit, like, oh, it's quite difficult. It's quite difficult being around, like, that all the time, the constant jokes, and not really getting the severity of the situation. Like, even when I was staying with them filming for 10 days in Ireland, and there were points where I was like,
Shut up.
Like, yeah. And then you feel guilty, and you're like, fucking hell, like, that's not his fault. And I love him, and I love her. And I, like, I just, but all I want from it, really, like, as far as Paul's concerned, like, it's very difficult because he's now been living with us for 10 years. It probably, things aren't going to change. I asked man that, like, are things going to change?
So is there nothing that they can do to repair his short-term memory?
Like, he's definitely improved. He has improved. There are definitely things that help. So, like, if Paul just got up in the morning and just, like, had a day and, like, didn't, there are things that make him worse.
Alcohol.
Yeah.
Right.
So if he didn't do that.
But I think that's a message for not just brain injuries, a lot of things in life, you know. There's, like we said earlier, there's a lot of things you could do.
And it would help her if he didn't, because that's the one thing that she's a bit like, come on, like, you know. But that said, like, how can any of us really stand here without having had that happen to us and say that we might not just do that, might not just be like, fuck it, I'm having a glass of wine because I'm not working.
Exactly.
So, like, the way he sees it, like, sometimes my aunt's like, oh, I've got to go to work and do it. And he's like, oh, I wish I could go to work. You know, like, what's that like for him to have, like, lost? Because the way that this is like was way too complex to delve into in the film, but the way that disability benefit works in Ireland is like, or possibly here as well, is like you can only do a certain number of hours. So to still receive your disability benefit, you can only do a certain number of hours a week at minimum wage. And my uncle was like a really, really like top-falutin painter and decorator. Like my uncle painted George Clooney's house in Ireland, and he painted Helen Mirren's house. Sweet. It's like the best of the best. Like he was a great. So for him to like do a minimum wage painting job under some other guy is a bit like, fuck that, I'm not doing it. You know, like he's like got pride about that.
Because he's still compensating of that like, area of his life.
Oh yeah, big time. Whereas my aunt's like, we need the money, just fucking do it. And take your disability. He's like, I'm not doing that.
And you can totally see that perspective.
So that's complex.
Can you work at a supermarket? Like that might sound weird. No, but you know what I mean? It might have been like,
I mean, it's my dream job.
But like, you know what I mean? Like if you like excel at something, I understand where you go, I don't want to go backwards. But it's like, fuck, why don't you just start something?
That's the logical, but he's very stubborn. Yeah. And same with the fags and all that. Like, okay, oh no, I need to give it up myself. You're not going to make me give it up. I need to give it up myself. Been saying that for 10 years.
Stuff though, man. Stuff. Yeah. Like my mum, who's, you know, she gave up the, she had a triple heart bypass 2 years ago, and she said that she was on a fucking hospital bed, and I probably shouldn't be saying this because she got taken out of hospital last night, but I'll say it. She said, swore blind that she was going to give up the cigarettes. Like, you know, I'm not going to do that. But 3 months later, in her room, out the window, smoking cigarettes. It's really hard for people to give things up. I say that as an addict, having, you know, worked through my addiction, but you know, when it's been like I'm built inside you for your full life, it's a lot more difficult to get away from that. Especially,
and it's like very much part of the kind of Irish culture, like just like it's a difficult thing to like you're not going to change a person like that. But what has changed, I would say, is my aunt's reaction to it. My aunt used to have a lot of that guilt and like, I've got to be here all the time. And now she's a little bit like, I've got to go and live my life. And she got a master's. She's just got a distinction in a master's that she's worked for, and she's went and done that for herself. She started like my mum and dad help her out a wee bit. She started doing like wee like horse riding lessons and just gone off and like she'll do that, and that's for her. And we're taking her to New York. And it's not that like I'm paranoid about this, that people, it's like almost like we're leaving him behind and like Lindsay's coming, but it's not like that at all. He doesn't like to travel anymore. He doesn't like to leave really his sort of comfort zone. But like it's okay that Lindsay does. And she can like, he's got family there.
It's okay for other people to have a life beyond what they're
and she should. And she would be such a powerful spokesperson for what this is like to live with somebody with a brain injury and how to kind of get through it. And I really believe that she could inspire and help a lot of people that might be in that position.
So it's a fucking cool documentary, man. Like, genuinely, just the concept alone makes you want to watch it.
Have you had much in the way of feedback of people who have suffered like similar things, or even people offering
support?
No,
because it really hasn't been seen enough yet. Yeah. So it's literally just been released. In the way that sort of these films work is that Scottish Documentary Institute, that supported it, is they distribute it to festivals worldwide, which is like probably the best thing about getting that funding. Like, so you get a little bit of funding to make the film, which is quite modest, but the real value is in their connections with the worldwide festival circuit. So they put this film into DocNYC. They put it into, so after New York, I'm going to North Carolina, and it's playing there twice, which is like nuts to me, because it's like, and I'm bringing Lindsay there too. So, and then Leeds, it's playing in Leeds, and it's playing in Inverness, and that's kind of the start.
That's a come down from North Carolina and New York.
It's also playing down in Deniston.
Start with Leeds and work your way up.
But no, Leeds International Film Festival is a really reputable film festival, I have you know. It's like a BAFTA and Oscar qualifier.
It's not as big as Sheffield though, is it?
No, it isn't. Sheffield Documentary Festival is like, if I got into Sheffield, I'd be buzzing. Like, I've been to Sheffield Doc Fest like 3 times as a volunteer. It's the biggest volunteer.
That sounds like I'm really informed. Someone told me once that Sheffield has one of the biggest documentary festivals in the world. And I laughed at them.
It's one of the biggest. I've been to it 3 times and it's brilliant.
Yeah. Is there, because my brother does a similar kind of thing in New Zealand, makes TV shows and movies and stuff, is that distribution's one of the big issues, isn't it? Is it now like trying to get it onto your Netflix or your Amazon Prime or your...
No, I mean, never has there been a better time for that to happen with documentaries. Like, really, like, now people are interested in documentaries, whereas, like, years ago, you wouldn't have got it distributed in that way. But so there's a lot of potential, and it's very, very exciting. But essentially this film now is in its festival circuit, so like it'll go to festivals, and only if you're like in a festival audience will you see it, and hopefully we'll get a Glasgow and Edinburgh screening again where like I can sort of say it's showing, come along, it's only going to be a five or whatever, and you get everyone along. And that's what happened with Lumo. We had a Glasgow showing and it was great, it was sold out, because it was like people were like, when can I see it? And you're like, it's playing in Glasgow, and they all came out in their droves. Yeah. They voted for it and won an award.
That would have done so much for the hip-hop community in Scotland as well, because we were talking really to, nice. As we introduced the episode, about with Loki, you know, this machoism, you know, the fact mm-hmm. that you feel like you have to either fit a certain mold. If you do dark rhymes, you have to live a depressive lifestyle. If you try to be a wee bit gangster, you need to try and do shit that makes you seem mental in the scheme of things. But, you know, no one's... at that time when I did hip hop, which was over 10 years ago, no one's really been open about their feelings mm-hmm. in an honest way. Mm-hmm. If you're writing it down in rhymes, and maybe it's coming out a wee bit, but mm-hmm. there's a lot of fucking misplaced people and mm-hmm. music that do hip hop mm-hmm. that use it as a conduit for their feelings, but mm-hmm. they might now be having conversations with their mates going, this is exactly what...
That was the number one motivation for making the film, was what I saw happening, because I didn't know Lumo, but I knew a lot of his friends just through... I run club nights that used to be kind of live music nights, and we would do the odd, so Louis from Hector Berserk would play them, and he kind of brought and Gas brought his Badmouth Battles there, so we would do the odd hip hop night, and I knew them through that, and that, so I had them on Facebook, and what I saw happening after Lumo died was this kind of outpouring of emotion and grief, and everyone kind of talking about their mental health, and then people piling in and being like, fucking hell, man, I'm here for you. And I was like, whoa, I've never seen this.
Yeah.
And normally they're all sniping at each other. They still do.
That's part of the culture, though, isn't it?
Like, one-upmanship and being dicks to each other and getting wide and everybody piling in on one side or the other. And you're like, but what was happening after Callum died, it was really, really powerful. Community. And I was to me, I saw that microcosm of Scottish hip hop being turned on its head, and thought what if you applied that to society as a whole, and everyone here is not talking really, or not really being honest, if we took this example, that's the idea behind the film.
And then it's the continued conversation, and it's up to the hip-hop community in Scotland to take that message, you know, and that situation that happened, and carry it forward and keep it going.
It's still hard for them, I think, though.
It's hard for people like us, you know. Mm-hmm. You meet someone new, you can't just open up straight away and go, this is how mental I am, you know. You need to find the pockets of space where you can talk.
Yeah, it's hard. I think being open about your mental health is so, so difficult. And a really funny example to me is that, it's not funny at all. It's bad. But, when I became ill, I was working for the Mental Health Foundation, and it took me, 2 months to tell them.
It seems like you could have just opened a door and wherever your offices were and, talked to somebody.
But I felt... I work for them and I'm supposed to be doing this, and God, I can't be, I can't fall, I'm not yeah. one of the people that falls down, I'm one of the people that works for the charity that supports people. So it took me such a long time to admit it, shaking fury and being I can't do this event, I've got really bad anxiety, and for them to just be it's all right, it's okay, we'll take over, you chill out, and their reaction obviously massively helped me, but it took me, you know, and I work for a mental health charity, and I didn't feel like I could be open.
There's certain jobs as well that I think you would go, they're you know what I mean? It takes a certain level of emotional strength. It's not even physical strength. It's not intellectual strength. It's emotional strength. See, my mum used to manage a charity that did activities for people with intellectual handicap. So mm-hmm. it was IHC in New mm-hmm. Zealand. And so, and that... she got one of my best mates at the time a job, and it was a proper, he was one of the most positive dudes mm-hmm. I'd ever met, always buzzing, always happy, no matter what you did, you could kick him in the nuts, and he'd be like, mate, you're so good at kicking, yeah, I really yeah. appreciate that. But he would, come back after a day, and you're like, how you going, man? He's like, mm-hmm. It was a day-to-day, eh? Because, quite often you are talking to people that don't comprehend why you're talking to them like that, or what you're talking about, and... He's on an average day, I might stop 15 people having sex, but they don't know why they shouldn't have sex. They just, and you know what I mean? And that wasn't the worst part, but he was just you mm-hmm. can't ever be angry. Mm-hmm. They don't understand why what they're doing affects you or whatever. And you, they're people that, like, they might do something, like, you might do something and they just push something over immediately after. Mm-hmm. And it's not like them being a dick. It's just they don't understand that that's what, you know. And he was taking that. And I've never seen someone be, like, so buzzy, so chirpy, and then without, you know, I don't think he even got properly depressed out of it. Maybe he did. But when I was still friends with him.
It's a lot to contemplate, I think. And actually, like, that what you've touched upon is really, really important because, like, society largely ignores people with intellectual, you know, disabilities. So it's like people with learning difficulties, like, are so, so, so overlooked. And it's a really... Can you imagine how scary a place that must be for the families of those people and the people that are going through it? And the fact that you kind of, like, on the whole dismiss, it's like, you can't do the jobs that we do. You can't, like, it's a difficult life.
Yeah.
And there's not there's nobody fighting the corner of those people except the folk that are directly, and it's a bit like people aren't really fighting the corner of mental health unless you've been directly affected. And it's like, there's a lot of visibility for the kind of acceptable, you know, and there's not a lot of visibility for that at all. And I still think there's a lot of work to be done in that. Actually, Mental Health Foundation, like, one of the cool things that it has is that they have a sort of offshoot, which is called the Foundation for People with Learning Disabilities. And they did a whole report into hate crime against people. And, like, it's through the roof, hate crime against people with learning disabilities is, like, out of control. And there's nobody fighting for it. There's, like, one lady in the House of Lords that fights for, because she has a daughter that's affected. That's a scary place to be for people. It's much like carers or whatever. It's like there's these little, like, isolated communities and nobody is fighting their corner. And that's why it's so refreshing when people, like, you know, Loki or whatever, does fight their corner and you're like, holy shit, there's somebody that has a platform and he's using it for good. How amazing. And, like, more people should do that. As far as I'm concerned, you know, I know some people that are in, like, bands that are fucking famous now, or, like, and I'm like, oh, like, do more, you know, like, say something, like, for people, like,
but you, it's obviously tough for them because they've been told what to do,
of course,
and how to do
it. Like, it's not, you know, and it's very, very, like, political, and it's very kind of, but if I had that opportunity, I'd be shouting from the rooftops, like, about this shit that needs to, and that's what I'm saying about,
like,
writing a blog.
It almost feels
like
sometimes, like, pick one as well, though. Like, if you're talking, if you've got a mental health, like, that's where you can really shine. Mm-hmm. And that's not me, you know, because I've got my feelings on, you know, I've got a brother with a disability. I had a candid conversation with him 2 weeks ago about, he's now in his fourth year at uni, and we were sitting down talking about a radio documentary he's going to make, and I'm saying, why don't you make yourself the case study and make your case study about how you're going to get work?
Mm-hmm.
That way you can start making inroads into
how
you get work. Because first time I was open with him about it, I said, because I sometimes worry about what your next step is, because I don't have the answers, you know. But he has to take that on himself. You know, I'll raise the mental health flag. But you can't take on too many causes because...
No, I know, and like, totally, and you can get overwhelmed, you can overwhelm yourself with things, like, if you take on all of the world's problems, like, I get really fucking down about Syria and stuff, and then you're just like, well, if I try and live my life getting up every day and thinking about this, then it's going to fuck me up, and, like, there's definitely a balance to be had, but, like, as long as you feel satisfied that you're championing
something,
and, like, feeling, like, doing the right thing and not being fucking floating through life like a lot of people do... Especially a lot of people with money, like, and I know I shouldn't, but, like, a lot of people, like, they just don't consider it. They almost assume that, like, I've been born into this, like, and I am in some way entitled to it, and fuck all of you. That's the Tories. Yeah. Like, I mean, that's just it. Like, I can't.
And I do understand that.
It really fucks me up.
I don't want to play devil's advocate because I fucking hate them. But
I thought you were going to say you're a Tory there. I was going to be like,
Hide your Tory territory.
He cancelled his membership and joined the Brexit party.
It happened to me in London. It happened to me in London. I was like, fuck the Tories. They're my housemate. It was like that. Yeah. They're not that bad. And I was like, I'm living with a Tory. Shit.
I started this podcast saying my dad's a delivery driver. My mum walked in fucking, you know, check it.
I know,
so I'm no way a Tory.
Some of those folks voted for Tories.
So did Jacob Rees-Mogg,
mate. Like, because the right-wing press, like I've got some of those people voting for Tories, and it's just like they don't even realise they're fucking themselves over.
Well, like what you said about Syria, I sit and think about every facet of what people might go through and how they end up where they are. Somebody that's entitled, that's grew up with money, hasn't been exposed to the certain elements that would make us trigger and think about certain things, so you can't even though they're intelligent, emotional intelligence doesn't come into it. They've not been exposed to the emotional intelligence that we have.
It's not always with malice at all. It's not always with malice. Like, a lot of the people, like, they just genuinely don't know. But then, I mean, I've been, like, to a point brought up, like, in a relatively comfortable, you know, setup.
It's all coming out now, isn't it? Fucking Scottish Tory, other.
I still consider other people's feelings, and that's probably, like, testament to my mum and dad that they would be like, no, we need to think about, you know, like, like, you know, are you doing enough and other people, and, like, don't be, but
it was what I used as my coping mechanism whenever I was had my, like, feeling down with whatever anxiety or depression or stuff. And it was something I actually spoke about in one of my first CBT sessions, was that, like, I would think, how on earth can I feel, like, down, or how on earth can I, what entitles me to feel like shit when you watch the news and see everything else that's going on? And I'm kind of like, well, you can't use that as, like, a coping mechanism, because you've still got to live your life. Like, it's a totally different scenario. And that was kind of a bit of a learning curve, because you do, like, you'll feel like absolute shit. You can't get out of your bed, and then you think to yourself, mate, look at what's happening in other bits of the world. How dare you, like, be so fucking entitled that that's how you feel? Yeah.
That's like a self-flagellation thing. Yeah. It's not. It's like making yourself feel worse because you think, like, oh, I shouldn't be feeling like this. But it's not how it works. And it's like your own perception of how things are, and, like, how, you know, bad you feel. Like, that's still a real thing. That's still a thing. And it doesn't take, like, you know, mental health is a real thing. And only once people have experienced it, do they really understand that. There's still a lot of people that haven't, and, like, good for them. Like, I mean, that must be great. But you know the people instantly that get it, and the people that don't. And it's like, well, you've felt this, or you haven't, or you have at least empathy towards it, or you haven't. And it's quite something. But, like, I'm glad that I am, like, for one, I'm actually glad that I went through what I went through in the summer, because, like, my understanding has increased tenfold. And actually, like, I feel like I can 100% be there for people more now, even more than I was always understanding, I think, and always, like, liked being there and being that friend that people felt they could talk to. But, like, now I really get it. Like, I really get what it's like to feel like there's like a complete hopelessness, and it's, like, it's scary. And I'm worried actually about it a wee bit, because I'm like, whoa, I never thought I would get there, and I did. So there's that potential for that to happen again.
But you're more aware now.
But now that I've seen what can happen after that, like, how good life can be, it's like, oh, whoa, like, it's well worth digging your heels in. And
do you know what you said there? I was going to mention this about an hour ago when we first spoke about it. I'm so glad that I went through that as well, just because I appreciate everything a lot more, but also I'm aware of what my fucking head can do. I understand it more. Like, I spent the past 3 nights, like, I messaged you yesterday saying I'm due a panic attack. He's the only guy that I've ever been with when I had a panic attack where I passed out 10 years ago.
Shit.
But, like, that does, like, shit they're building horrible. Up in my chest and my head right now, and I am falling asleep, and, like, about maybe 20 minutes after I fall asleep, I wake up gasping for air, and I feel like I can't.
The,
like,
worst ever.
You got a free bottle of water for Burger King out of that. I got a free bottle,
and I worked at a Disney store at the time, and my manager came up and said, you don't have to work. But
did they?
Every cloud. And
exactly.
Did they give you any free toys?
Nah. But I stole all of them anyway. So
50% off.
Theft.
By the way, how much money did you, like, how much, what was your discount?
When I worked at Disney store, my discount about 15-20%, but I didn't have any nieces or nephews at that time, so I didn't take advantage.
That's a shite discount.
Seems quite good.
It's like 15-20%
for modern day retailers.
It's okay, but in Urban Outfitters you used to get 50.
You Urban Outfitters?
No, I never worked there, but I had a friend that did, and I bought a pair of trainers.
Oh, you lucky. I used to work at I always walked into Urban Outfitters when I was younger. Genuinely, it's the sort of store I walked into and went, you're cool enough to browse here, but not cool enough to shop here.
Don't spend your money here, because you'll spend twice as much as you need to on one.
My old flatmate Joe went for a job in Urban Outfitters, and he was handing over his CV, and they were like, oh, like, why do you think you should work here? And he went, I think I'm a hip happening kind of guy. And they were like, okay, we'll be in touch. And he is a cool guy.
Maybe 1970s up and out for us.
A hip happening kind of guy. And then he was like, why did I say that?
Those bloody squares didn't have a
job. See, you were like 15-20%. Sounds so shitty. When I used to have it, when I worked at a pizza shop as a teenager, right?
You just 100% pizzas.
My manager, my mates would rock up stoned as fuck in a car, and he'd be like, give those boys a pizza. They need a fucking pizza.
Yeah, but we've explored this before. McDonald's, we did the same. I remember working on a drive-through window and you would just give them like 7 extra burgers.
100% discount.
Yeah, but you do.
Oh, I'd love that. I'd love that. I actually went to get a wee McDonald's before I came here and then changed my mind, walked back to Marks and Spencer's, didn't even buy, I just bought you those sweets. I never bought any McDonald's at all, but I was thinking about it and I was like, wee snacksident for a Sunday wouldn't be like...
It's like snacksident is the best phrase I've ever heard in my life.
Something my friends in London taught me about when you just like accidentally walk past the McDonald's and you're like, come out with 4 cheeseburgers and you're like, oh,
I'm pretty much like, are you guys at the point in your life where like, and anyone listening I think gets night. This, you can't like, see, when you're younger, you buy a McDonald's meal, you get your chips, right? I'm talking about 16-year-old James. You get the chips, you get the McChicken sandwich, and you get a drink. I can't walk into McDonald's and get a McChicken sandwich, the chips, and the drink now without getting the extra cheeseburger or the extra 5 bits of chicken.
I've got a wee operation on the go. So, like, so see, you can get 4 chicken nuggets in a Happy Meal, right? You can't get 4 chicken nuggets on their own, you have to get 6.
Right.
But you can get a cheeseburger for a 99p. For your 6 chicken nuggets, you're going to be more than that. So you get a chicken nugget Happy Meal and an extra cheeseburger. If you were to get a cheeseburger Happy Meal and extra chicken nuggets,
right,
it's going to amount to more.
So you're like actually breaking down the McDonald's
like
cost.
The Rain Man of McDonald's. Half a McDonald's
that's
hustle going on.
That's the best compliment I've ever received, to be honest. Yeah. I fucking love, I just, yeah.
You need to like that.
Because I was vegetarian for years and it was the one thing I really missed. And like my grandpa from Motherwell used to take us to McDonald's and like all my memories are of him, like, so you know how McDonald's will do like the special like seasonal thing?
Ah, yeah.
My grandpa would always like try and order it, like proper Motherwell guy, and he'd always be like, geez, one of the Mexican, like, what's it like get like really really confused about like what the thing was, so like that's when he's like, oh fuck it, just geez, I fell out of fish. Like, we always always quote that like every time.
Insider information, fillet of fish is the longest item to cook in that
oh,
fucking,
it takes ages.
Like, oh,
it's like a
oh,
6 minute
10
cook.
minutes, because nobody orders it.
Yeah.
Nobody orders it, and with good reason.
Because it's
terrible.
It's no good eating. It's
no
good eating.
It's a square of fake fish.
Yeah.
To be fair, it's the freshest burger you would get, because there's never one.
Because you never put it in
a... fish is a square of fish.
They don't swim around in the ocean as we fucking squares.
That's why they take so long.
That's an episode title I've ever heard.
That's why they take so long to cook, because you need to go out and catch the fish first.
I always try and fucking, whenever I'm at McDonald's, and I do this especially when I'm pissed, I try and use my accent to try and get a free McDonald's toy. So I always do the thing where I'll be like...
By the way, they've stopped toys now, unless they're not plastic.
No, they've still got toys.
No, that's the decision they've made.
Burger
no
King,
more plastic toys.
Burger King are changing it for books. I don't know if McDonald's
I think McDonald's are on board as well.
When does this kick in?
It kicks in as soon as...
You're in your 30s, don't worry about it.
I will get...
Wait a minute. Fucking march down there right now.
I've nearly finished that, Mr. Mainset.
See, like, the thing... I'm genuinely a bit upset by this.
He's
going to
fucking he's going to
march on Westminster.
I fucking will.
Well, you're making a placard as we speak, aren't you?
Everyone else is protesting against climate change, and he's protesting against the end of plastic.
He's like it's going to hit New Zealand last. It's fine.
It was about like 3 or 4 years ago when I went back and bought the Batman toys from 1989 because I was like, oh, might have been 92 or something, but I remember being 4 and we got one of them.
You remember being 4? None of us remember being 4.
No, but I remember being 4 and trying to get all of the things right.
Oh, trust me, he remembers being a baby.
He remembers being turned on at watching Batman Returns when he was about 5.
I remember it being turned on at Ronan Keaton when I was about 7 and being like, this is what.
I remember my girl turning me on. What was it? My girl,
the wee boy
I'm glad he died, because I'm into this girl.
I am into her.
I used to.
Oh, sorry, you've got an allergy to bees.
You're fine. Release the bees.
I can fucking get stung a million times and I'm still going strong.
But then
girl.
She came back in a second film and I think she's
as a massive bee.
No, she got after her cousin.
If we're on this embarrassing chain of confessions, I used to kiss Sporty Spice goodnight on my Spice Girls poster.
She's the hottest one though, and massively underrated. Like, only in adulthood have I been like, she is really hot, and everyone was always like, she's got a missing tooth, she's got a tattoo, she's a bit rough. Now you're like,
Nah, scary.
I definitely get in about that.
She was a Liverpool fan. Yeah, you would.
Scary's lovely.
Scary, she's not. Scary was by far the best looking.
But well, she's bit of a dick.
Let's not get into judging the Spice Girls. Shane, you were on a murderous rant there, so let. Lends nicely into your murderous question.
That's a segue. That's so what he's done.
Take it away.
All right. So we ask basically everyone this. It's quite hard hitting. It's quite serious. If you were to get away with murder, mm-hmm. how would you do it?
If you were to get away with murder, how would you do it?
Not if you would.
If I was to get away with murder, how would you do it? I'll tell you why that's a strange question, because...
She has.
I've murdered more people this weekend.
Funny you should say that. No, I'll tell you why that's strange, just because that doesn't really make sense. Like, if you were to get away with murder, how would you do it? It's not like you...
To be fair, I've said this before.
You murder to get away with it. You murder and then you've got some...
So see,
if
you were going
to
murder someone... I've said this in a previous podcast and got shot down.
The way he's phrasing that isn't right, is it?
It's a very bad phrased question.
Because
if you were going to murder someone and get away with it, how would you implement the murder?
Right, so I've dreamt about this a couple of times, like not in a... Mostly actually it's a nightmare, so it's not like the killing of the person isn't what the problem is, the getting rid of the body is what the problem is. So I've had a recurring nightmare maybe 5 or 6 times.
I mean, we won't judge yet until we see what the nightmare is.
No, I've never had recurring dreams. It's something
I only
I've
do it when
wanted.
I'm sick. I have one, I'm like a black and white square. When I was younger I had this, I actually think... reincarnation, if I ever believed in that shit, that would have been the point, because every time I was sick it was like me just horse-drawn carriages, black and white square going round. It was quite boring, but happened a few times.
A square?
Yeah, like
you
a fucking a old Victorian square.
Wait a second, I feel like you're avoiding
you
the murder
square.
Question yeah. now.
No.
Incriminate yourself, damn it.
So I've thought about this a few I've murdered somebody. I woke up one time and I was so convinced I had murdered somebody that took a good like 2 or 3 days really to be like, did my old best friend Chrissy and I murder somebody and throw them down a riverbank, or did I just dream that? And it took a long time to be like, I did just dream that. But even to this day, I'm not sure. So if I was
back
to get away with it,
newspaper records,
I'd just give it my best shot. To be honest, I think that I actually take that back. I think I would hand myself in.
Well, that's the worst
your
way
answer,
of getting
no.
away with it ever.
I like that. I appreciate it.
Is this like you saying that you might now go into a police station and go, did I murder someone?
I might have phoned, could you check New Lanark and see if there's any bodies down there? Because if there was, I fucking booted it down.
I went to New Lanark yesterday.
Did you?
Yeah, and I wasn't looking for bodies, but I went. I honestly said to my mate who's got a broken leg, I was like,
walk.
How much to
what
jump in there?
What was he doing in New Lanark? Because loads of hills there.
Nah,
looking for bodies.
I was thinking, I was like, how much for you to jump in there? And he's like, in my current state. And I was like, yeah, and broken leg.
You can get
leg.
Married on the roof of New Lanark.
That's right, somebody broke
it. There's a roof in New, like, just New Lanark.
All right, guys, I'm trying to tell you a story about
New Lanark's like the Truman Show. It's just under a dome and you can get married on the roof.
Can you get married in New Lanark? What's your New Lanark story?
Well, no, I was just saying to my mate with a broken leg how much to jump in, you know, where the waterfalls are near the cafe and shit. And he's like, probably 10 grand. And I was like, if you're broken leg? He's like, yeah. And I was like, that'd be a great way to murder someone, eh?
Do you know
cool
how
story,
he...
bro.
Oh, all right, this is I would hand myself into the police. Fucking hell.
Do you know how he...
Mine was an anecdote.
Well,
you're like...
We all stopped and listened for that fucking...
You can get married on the roof.
To be fair, we...
Oh, I just said to him...
We do suffer through a lot of his shite stories
in
this podcast.
Yeah, that was a bad
Wait,
one.
Wait, fuck you all, including you. You're lovely, but
do you want to... Do you want to...
Oh, I've got a scary dream. Why I killed my friend?
Do you want to regale us with your IKEA story?
Mate, my IKEA story is fucking sound.
The last thing I think we want to discuss is DJ etiquette, man. Because right. like you do a night called Milk Glasgow.
Yes.
It's up there with cool nights like Pretty Ugly, which are like they're the sort of nights that when I was coming up as a student and I seen these nights, I was like, I'm just not cool enough to go to either of these.
Oh no.
So I didn't. But
no, what?
You started a cool night in Glasgow.
So my night in Glasgow, the actual thing that we pride ourselves on is the inclusivity of it. So we used to get this guy that was coming, I swear to God, he was like in his 60s. And that was what I really loved about Milk, is that you could come to Milk and...
He looked cool though, like that's why I didn't go.
No, he didn't look cool. He was a wee old guy that maybe like was at the pub and wandered in. And there wasn't any of that. Like sometimes the bouncers could be a wee bit dickish with like... But we would always be out there fighting their corner, like, oh, fuck off, let them in. Like Milk was a really inclusive, great place to be, and it still is. And that was, like, what we pride ourselves on, is, like, you can beat anyone to come to Milk. It's just a big rammy. It's a lot of fun. Like, we usually spend, like, any money that we make, Aileen and I will be, like, at the bar buying everyday shots because, like, we just love it. It's what we do to just, nice. Like, enjoy.
When's your next night?
It's going to be on the 6th of November in Bar Block, and it's a pop punk karaoke.
Is that not midweek?
Nope, it's a Friday.
We're recording in
December.
Sorry. December. 6th of December.
Right.
6th of December in Bar Block, and it's a pop punk karaoke, which is like one of our most successful nights. We also do like a 90s, 2000s night at Rum Shack, and I still run club nights in London as well.
Nice. Were you anything to do with the Milk Edinburgh stuff? With fucking, the fucking
no.
meme?
Wait a minute now. No. So, important clarification to be made here is that Aileen and I have been running Milk since 2011, and we're now in 2019, so that's 8 years.
Good maths.
In flat one is where we started, and then 5 years into our game, Cushion, next door to flat one, decided to start a night called Milk. And their advertising was like all girls with their tits out, like squishing milk on themselves and stuff. And everyone was like, oh, have you just moved to Cushion? And we were like, that's nothing to do with us. Like, they've just like taken our name. They even went as far as to copy our poster design, which was like a milk carton with like people missing on the side.
Shit.
They've lifted it right out. We went to the newspapers. So me and Aileen were in the Evening Times. It's actually really funny because like we were on our way to like meet the photographer guy. And I was like to Aileen, definitely let's not do one of those things where like the newspaper's like look raging and like, and then the guy, as soon as we got there, the guy was like,
I want you
to hold, we had like a wee milk carton flowers, I want you to hold that, and I want you to stand next to the cushion. He was like, and you're really mad. And I was like, that to Aileen, I was like, fuck it, let's just do it. So like that, like pure raging in the papers and all that, like threatened him with a lawyer's letter. Like, Aileen's brother knew a lawyer, so we like got him a cease and desist and all that. And they fucking failed. Like, they really failed in Glasgow. Like, they didn't.
Well,
it's
shut
not
down
kicking
now.
Off at all. I think they probably are. Like, Cushion,
well, Cushion shut
aye,
down, aye.
Aye. I got banned from Cushion back in the day, actually. For
you fucking
the
shut
gun.
Them down. Good for you.
Good. So I got banned for the garage.
Well, that's a shame. It's
what
good,
is
good
what
club.
Is your go to floor filler?
Oh, fucking hell.
Ed Sheeran,
so
I'm
many. No. So many. But, like, I love, like, Macarena. Because the great thing about the Macarena, right, is that before people realise what it is, they're already doing it. And then they're like, oh no, it's the Macarena and I'm already doing this, but they can't help it. And they're like, they're away. That, honestly, every time, thousands of people doing the Macarena. Gala, Free From Desire, You Got True. The Love, Set You Free, Entrance. Living Joy, Dreamer, it's always a good one. Darude, Sandstorm.
Yeah, can we go here, man?
Daniel Bedingfield, got to get through this.
Can we not?
Heaven, Heaven, DJ Sammy.
Yes, you brought it back.
Baby, you're all that I want. Bam, bam. Alex DJ.
I've actually got that. Better Off Alone.
Better Off Alone. That's boop.
Do-do.
Boop. Boop. Do you think you're...
I was playing that last Saturday.
It's a banger. So that,
what about a Drunk Therapy half hour guest slot?
I'd love that.
But not a pop punk night, because I'd just be singing fucking Yellow Card.
Yellow Card, Ocean Avenue is like one of our go-to.
I'd be singing that very badly.
Do you want to be a guest singer?
No, because I can't sing.
That would be so
good. It doesn't matter, it's a karaoke, you don't need to sing.
I know, but I also don't really dig karaoke that much.
No. Trust me, you've not been to pop punk karaoke.
Do you not sing about a 660?
Yes. We had to take a Brand New off the playlist after the guy was outed as a fucking weirdo.
What happened to Brand New? Fucking Knife was one of my biggest fucking
as
tunes,
as it turns
man.
Out, he was into 15-year-olds, so he's off the list.
Shit. Ben Elton's the same, isn't he? Like,
and last night,
Ben Elton.
Ben Elton.
Fuck. Sorry, Ben. Sorry, Ben. What's the guy? What's the guy that sings? Ryan Adams. He's like
no.
Ryan Adams is off the list.
Ryan.
Like Rescue
Blues.
He's
off the list as well.
The guy
for
Lost Prophets is
terrible music. Lost Prophets, shame as well. Went to see them.
What
about?
Come on, Eileen.
Come on, Eileen. So,
how
actually,
hard is that, right?
I'm not allowed to play that because my Milk DJ partner is called Eileen.
When she was in high school,
they used to always sing, come on, Eileen, and she would like fucking hate it. So, I'm not allowed that one.
PTSD.
But it's a banger.
Right, so, but genuinely, when's your next actual DJ night?
Next actual DJ night is the pop punk karaoke. We DJ after the bands have been on.
Wait, so how long do you DJ for?
I'll DJ for 2 or 3
days. I just DJ forever.
Four hours,
I'm fucking. I'm I'm just saying, I'm laying it down. I'm an amazing pop punk. Like, I've got an amazing pop punk repertoire. Can we get a half hour drunk therapy guest slot?
Fuck it, yeah.
Yes.
What, us DJing?
Mate, yeah. I could string together some amazing pop punk
DJ in the world.
No, I'm not.
More than open
you
to that.
A bit like Alkaline Trio, Blink 182. They'll be on
that.
That's
a great thing. This is what I said to somebody the other day, because they were like nervous about coming down. It was my friend and they didn't have anything to come with, and they were like, oh, but you'll be DJing. And I'm like, it's nothing like that at all. It's like a massive rammy. Occasionally I remember that I need to go and like put songs on. Everyone's just dancing. It's
and you
so
just have
fun.
We'll do it for half an hour.
You go ahead. Just absolutely, you're welcome to.
I will forewarn you that James has a very bad reputation.
See if he's shit. Rubbish. It won't last more than two songs. He'll be booted off.
No, he'll get through. And what? When normally you'd have two songs, he'll play the start of 15 songs.
8 minute long. James man's number.
James is a person that as soon as the intro is finished, he goes right next song.
Because right. If people,
I promise you, I wouldn't do
I've
that.
Change my mind. Aye. You're listen, off the li- James.
I've got my pop punk. I'd stick a bit of Jimmy on, but you know, the Jimmy World Fallout Boy. Yeah. You know, I'd stick a bit of fucking Starting Line on.
Well, come along.
Yeah, I mean, but all American Rejects.
Like, the guy in the band covers Starting Line. He's this amazing guy called Scott, who is
Scott DC Fitness.
Yes.
Yeah, I know Scott.
So Scott is fucking lovely. Scott is like. He's got his own podcast as well, which is actually really good.
Yeah. No, we don't talk about
it. To be fair, he did about 3 days ago. He asked me to come on. You guys hate that, but I'm going on another podcast.
He's really lovely.
Don't do it, bro.
And Scott sings Starting Line and like absolutely puts his all into it, and I love it. Like, it's brilliant. And he's like a super, super sound guy.
Ah, he's cool, man. Sound he would come fun. On Drunk Therapy because he's been sober for a long time.
He's been sober for a long time, but he's amazing and his story's amazing. And he is like really. Yeah, actually, he's taught me a lot. Like, cause we've always Aileen and I have never had like a lot of money for milk. So like, we would always our kind of thing. We'd be like, "Oh, we'll get your beers in," and like, it would be a good night. Like, people are gonna come. Like, for some reason, like, milk just took off, and like, people. So like, one thing we could kind of guarantee the bands was like a good show. Like, we'll get you steaming, be a good show. We'll give you whatever money we make, but it might be fucking 30 quid, or it might be 70, or it might be, you know, like, we wouldn't have that guarantee. But at Cat House, like, we had like booze backstage, and like then that band played, and Scott's sober, obviously, and he was like, "Oh no, I don't drink or whatever," and like I was still in that kind of vibe of like that whole Glasgow thing of like, "Oh, fucking have a drink," you know, like not really considering. Actually, the other person that made me like think twice was Loki, because Loki used to perform like when he did drink for us, and then like now he doesn't, and like your instant thing is to be like, "Do you want a beer?" Like, and now I never do that. Like, now I think twice about being like. What are you drinking?
Do you want to drink?
I'll be like, "What? Yeah, exactly. What do you want to drink?" And they're like, "A lemonade." I'm not like, "Lemonade." I'm like, "Cool." Like, you know, yeah, like, yeah, so it makes me think twice, because like, I've never been addicted to alcohol, but like, I now understand that must be a fucking head melt to come into a space and be like presented with all this booze when you've been an addict and be like,
"Well, it's the
and me being like, somebody being like, "Fucking have one." Like, if you
don't be a dick, what are you, a pussy? That kind of shit.
Let's go. Exactly. And if like, if you literally had a problem with that and you're a bit like, "Fuck it, I will have one. Everyone else says."
Probably the biggest representation of an addiction where you have to like meet it head on more often. Like, no one's going to offer you heroin if you're a heroin addict. No one's going to go, "That made you want to gamble on fucking this or whatever."
And actually something he put up on Facebook like was my awakening, when he said like, you know, a lot of people, and I was like, "Holy fuck, like, I'm one of those people that are a bit like casual, a bit lax about it," and it made me think twice.
We're just getting a wee bit more, to use a shite phrase again, woke on everything.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, and it's good. And like, I fully admit that I wasn't, and now I am. And it's good. Like, it's, and I credit like folk like that with being like, "Holy shit, like,
good on him." But yeah, Scott, if you're performing and you ever listen to this one, I'm doing an amazing 30-minute DJ set. So we're going to have to. Gonna have to put your set list versus my
regret.
DJ list.
This is what regret feels like. Yeah. No, I'm heading on. You're more than welcome to. More than welcome.
Last question, then, Shane.
It's for you, James. Before you, we just need to rip you to bits, because you've kind of brushed over the fact that how you're like, "Oh, I'm a DJ. I could DJ."
Fucking DJ, man.
No, but like, Danny, me and you need Spotify. A bit of time now, because every time someone doesn't look like they're having a good time, if James has put a song on, immediately he'll skip it. And it's like, if someone's just like pouring a drink, he's like, "Oh, they're not dancing. New song." Like, you, I like
oh, no,
you as
I
a
like,
human, but
you'd
be the worst DJ.
You have to be confident in your song a lot.
I'll deliver.
Dance and, like, trust that other people will follow, and then eventually they're like, oh, it's that tune, and you're like, yeah, it's fucking that tune, like, you know.
I'll hire some dancers.
I'll confess that pop punk is one of my least favourite genres of music, so it's all on you, James.
Mate, I am so confident in pop punk that I will deliver a half an hour fucking banging playlist, man. I've seen most of these bands.
Another promise to add to the James list.
I'll do this one. I've ticked them off.
I absolutely love it.
Right, so last plug.
Mm-hmm.
You've already told us where, or anyone that wants to message Hannah can get a link to the Lumo documentary before it's inevitably on BBC Scotland again.
Again.
Where are we going to see your new documentary and when?
I'm really hoping to get into, this is a bit of pressure for them, but I'm really hoping to get into Glasgow Short Film Festival. So basically, last year, Lumo was at Glasgow Short Film Festival and it won the Audience Award. And it basically means that, like, you play with about five other films and there's like four of those screenings where five short films will play. The audience vote on their favourite one. And the winner, the prize is you get to make the trailer for the next year's festival. So that's what I'm doing now. I've got a banging idea and it's going to be really cool.
Is it like buttons that they press a button
for?
No,
it's like very old school. It's paper. You vote. It's like five stars, four stars, and you rip the one that you think it is. So we won it.
Nice.
So it was great. Like, me and my brother had the best night ever at the awards thing. It was just like so lovely. Like, we got a special mention in the jury and I had to go up and like do a speech, and then I was like, oh, like, we never won. And then they were like, and now for the audience award, and then they called out my name again, and then they played the full film to like all this. So I was like, what the fuck? And then I had to go up again. I was pure steaming. I was like, oh no, this is awful. But like, basically, the prize for that is you get like a small budget to make the trailer for next year's festival. So I'm now making the trailer for Glasgow Short Film Festival 2020. I'll tell you about that after, like, because I want it to be a surprise. But it's a really good idea. And
don't worry, we'll just record a wee bit over the end of this and tell you exactly what she says.
I'll make it. And it'll be good. But I'm really hoping that the new film will get into that festival, because it would be really lovely for me. I hope I don't win the audience award again, so I don't want to win another. I don't want to make another trailer. Quite a lot of work. But like,
well, let's go for the big one.
I hope the jury prize, £2,000. Come on. But I hope that that film will get in there, because everyone's asking me. And somebody a while ago, a filmmaker, because I used to like fire out Lumo to whoever. Anybody would be like, oh, I'd love to see your film. I'd be like, here's a link. Then you wouldn't hear back from them. So you're like, did you watch it and not like it? Did you not have time to watch it? Did you watch it halfway? Because if somebody's just like watching a film on their, you know, like, I've done it. Mm-hmm. Even the best documentaries, you're like, I'm going to go to sleep now. I'll pause that. Never got back to it. Whereas if you're in a cinema, you're captivated. You're like fully in the film, in the experience. That's how you should watch a film. And I realise that now. So when people ask me for a link, I'm mostly like,
here's
no.
Where it's shown.
Like, I'll come along to this and see it then, not like when you're just half asleep in your bedroom, like, oh, it was quite good. Because, like, you're going to have a different experience of it then. But I send it to some people.
Cool. So, soon then.
you might get it, you might not. We can't promise anything unless you own a theatre.
I'd love to make a longer film for telly.
We'll link it as soon as it's up. And the inevitable crowd fund for your auntie to, you know.
To, like, travel the world with this film, like, because she so deserves it. She so deserves it.
Listen, thank you for coming in and being so honest, man. It's been refreshing to just have this conversation.
I've loved it. I've absolutely loved it.
And further educate Shane on mental health and find out these weird stories. There's been some in here.
None this episode.
He wants to fuck a mushroom.
Ah, yeah, if you had to.
Cheers, guys. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
That was Drunk Therapy. If you enjoyed this podcast, go listen to some of the other ones. The old you would have. If you're on socials, like us there as well. Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram @DrunkTherapy. It's something weird on Twitter, which I can't remember right now.